Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Friday edition of A Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host today, and today we're going to be getting a preview of this week's Friday Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center featuring one of the best photographers in Alaska, Mark Kelly. Celestial Mythbuster Dennis Mamana. I knew I was going to get that wrong. We'll talk to Dennis. He'll be here. He'll tell us his last name. And he's going to be here to preview his Friday presentation at the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm excited. We're going to be meeting the members of the band Color Me Bad performing this weekend at Suite 907. They're going to be in here. And we'll learn about the Success In and Out program. That's all coming up. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation Council wants to devote funds to help residents in one of the tribe's poorest areas repair their homes. Federal policy banned all building projects for decades in the community known as the Bennett Freeze. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The Navajo Nation Council has proposed spending $1.6 million to renovate and replace more than 60 homes. About 8,000 people occupy the 1.5-acre area formerly known as the Bennett Freeze in northeastern Arizona. The federal government prohibited all building and development there in the 1960s because of a land ownership dispute between the Navajo and Hopi tribes. Economic activity came to a halt, and residents were even barred from making basic home improvements. Congress repealed the freeze in 2009, but unemployment and poverty are widespread, and many homes have become dilapidated. Walter Phelps is a delegate for the Navajo Nation Council.
I visited some homes that are in serious conditions. Just because you don't replace the roof, the water leaks in and it ruins the insulation, it ruins the sheetrock. And then if it goes into the walls, it just destroys everything. There's mold, there's mildew, there's all sorts of hazards that are created.
If the bill becomes law, the funds would be administered by the tribe's Division of Community Development. The agency would allocate the money for building materials, basic maintenance, and home repairs. The full council will now consider the spending bill. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The Alaska Historical Commission now has a representative from the island of Kodiak to help form policy when it comes to Alaska's history. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
Alicia Drabeck is the Senior Vice President of Community and Government Affairs at the Fognak Native Corporation, and Alaska's governor recently appointed her to fill the indigenous seat on the Alaska Historical Commission after the last holder of the position retired. Drabeck explains the commission oversees any kind of historic preservation planning for the state.
I'm really excited about the opportunity. I think that I'll have a lot to contribute. I understand that the commission reviews Alaska historical publications. They make decisions about monuments or historical regulations. And I think that I have a lot of connections across the state so that when I am exposed to something for review, I would have a knowledge of which tribal group or individual scholars that we might want to reach out to.
The commission's work includes helping determine appropriate names for geographic features in Alaska. This issue was in the spotlight last year with the official name change of Mount McKinley to Denali. Alaska Native people were among those to embrace the change, saying the action reclaimed the mountain's traditional Native name. Drabeck says she feels she's able to represent Alaska and be mindful of the indigenous peoples throughout the state. Her term ends July 1st, 2018. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Next week, some U.S. lawmakers in the House Committee on Natural Resources are scheduled to consider the Native American Tourism and Improving Visitor Experience Act and the Eastern Band Cherokee Historic Lands Reacquisition Act. The tourism bill looks to increase collaboration between federal tourism assets and to expand cultural tourism opportunities in the U.S. The other bill seeks to take certain federal lands in Tennessee into trust for the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. The legislative hearing is being held by the Subcommittee on Indian, Insular, and Alaska Native Affairs. Also next week in Washington, D.C., the Executive Council of the National Congress of American Indians is holding its winter session. The session will examine and seek solutions to several issues facing Native communities through legislative and policy planning. Representatives from the White House, Congress, and government agencies are among those expected to attend, including U.S. Senator John Barrasso, Karen Diver, the Special Assistant to the President, and Lawrence Roberts, the Acting Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffered from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. Support by the 2016 Forum on Dropout Prevention for Native and Tribal Communities, March 6th to 9th. 400 educators and youth practitioners from over 30 states sharing best practices on dropout prevention. Info on registration at dropoutprevention.org. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Juno Arts and Humanities is pleased to present Reverend Bobby Lewis and Eustace Johnson in their fifth year of inviting Juno to sing gospel music. This year's visit will once again include workshops, outreach events, and multiple performances, including the third Motown for Our Town on February 19th at the Jack, and two gospel celebration performances on February 21st at Thunder Mountain High School. Workshop information and tickets to these performances available at the Jack or jahc.org.
And welcome back to the KTO studios. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today's Juno afternoon. And with me in the studio is Mark Kelly. Mark, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Among other things you've got going on, you're going to be doing a lecture tonight, the Friday Fireside Lecture out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. What are you going to focus
on? That's true.
It's going to
be thinking about photos. So it's obviously photography and kind of downloading my brain onto the big screen on what I think and what I'm thinking about when I'm doing it.
Like the idea of what you do before you press the button is sort of the idea, right? Before
no,
you...
what all the goes into like the base, the layers of knowledge that goes into before you press the thing. And then once you press the button, it's intuitive, at least for me. I don't think about it. Someone asked me to do one of these shows a while back ago. Oh, what do I do? And then it was amazing. I'm going, you do this, you do this, you do that. And so it's kind of a download of what I'm thinking, what I'm looking for when I'm looking for a photo and looking at photos.
What are just some of the primer steps that you would say are some of the things that people maybe who are amateur photographers like myself don't quite think about when I go and take a photo?
I think what people don't think about is thinking about photos. You know, what the important thing is you have to know your basics. You have to know your exposure and stuff, and that all helps. But like, what's the story behind the photo, and what is the moment that brings that story out? And that's what makes a good photo, is figuring out your story and that moment instead of just clicking away. What are you really trying to say at that moment, and where is that moment that is the define? I mean, you take a video clip, right? Let's not even my photo, like the Challenger explosion, you know? And everyone knows that final picture. It's burned in your brain, right? But that actually was a video. And then the still image came out of that clip. And so what you're doing is you're fast-forwarding through life, and your job is to find that one instant, that one 100th of a second that defines that moment.
Does that sometimes happen after the process, though? Sometimes I would think you must look at your collection of photos you took out in the field and say, oh, wow, I didn't realize I got that, or...
That sometimes does, yes,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
It's like the video clip of the Challenger thing. You know, that famous still image was a video, and one freeze frame has come to represent that whole issue, that whole moment in time. And everyone knows that image.
Yeah.
No one probably can remember that whole video. And so your job as going out, whether you're taking your kid's picture or you're snapping your dog, is to think about what's going on at that moment and where is the best moment to capture it. And so I think you should think about your photos and I don't think people do. I think they just go out and click, 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 and that's fair too. But
do you have examples in your work where you feel like maybe people even love the picture or think it's a good one, and you think, you know, I didn't really capture what I was trying to capture in that moment?
You know, what I have is a lot of memories of missed shots. And like when I do a shoot for a magazine or something, or someone that's hiring me to do a shoot, sometimes I come back so disappointed. Because I remember the shots I missed. Well, I send it to the editor. I get this rave letter going, wow, this is great. We love it. And I forget
what I got. He's only seeing what I got. He doesn't know the 10 really great images I missed. So I tend to dwell on those, which is really negative because you should. I did get enough to get through the job, but.
But then they're on the flip side. There must be those moments when you know you got it.
Oh, yeah.
In that moment, you know you really have something.
Yeah, like this. Well, this summer I was coming into Glacier Bay. I was on a larger boat, and we came into John Hopkins Glacier, and it was on July 5th, I remember distinctly. It went off like fireworks. It just went. It just started calving, and it's huge. It's 350 feet high, and it's not all white. It's all this rock and mud and rubble, and it's just pounding the water. And I got my 600 on. We're way long ways away, and I'm just trying to keep everything framed. And I can see there's seals on the icebergs with the calving glacier coming down, and I'm really excited. I'm shooting, and it just keeps going off for like half an hour. I can't stop shooting. And then we get up closer, and I realize there were kayakers in the area, but I had never saw them in my frame. So I started looking through my frames, and all of a sudden, they're kayakers. And it was just like a little gift from God. Hey, I'm going to put some kayakers in here and give this the scale.
Give you
like,
scale, right?
I'm going, where did that come from? I'm shooting for half an hour. I didn't even see them because the thing is so massive.
Right.
And you're just trying to keep it in frame, and you're hitting the motor drive, and then you sit down and look at it, and all of a sudden, kayakers appear.
And then it seems it's interesting to me, as you were mentioning, this is the 28th year of your calendar, which is, we can talk about that in a moment, and this is what you're describing as one of the photos in one of your calendars.
Right.
But it's a fascinating thing for me to think someone like you who spends a lifetime photographing largely this one area of the world, Southeast Alaska. And we were just discussing two nights ago something you've never seen before happened, and
it was great. It was the Northern Lights, and of course Juno is now in love with Northern Lights, and there's so many people out there. The Juno Photo Group is doing such a good job with their photos, and some of the photographers are just great, and they share so much. And of course, everyone was out. It was a 5 out of 9. It was supposed to be a hot night. And, you know, you're waiting, and there's some green lights, haze for a while. And then, like, in 10 minutes, this rainbow arch forms over the glacier from North Douglas boat ramp. And it has the companion reflection in the water. And it's like, I've never seen a rainbow arch. And I'm going, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as much as I photograph Northern Lights, I'm sure there have been other rainbow arches, all green rainbow arches in the Northern Lights in Aurora lingo. But it was great. And it worked out. And it was fun to put it on Facebook. And then, of course, it's going crazy on Facebook.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know,
how has that added to your business and to your artwork and to your work and to how you respond to things, the social media aspect?
It's kind of interesting because last year in March, there was these great set of Northern Lights that lots of people were photographing, and they just blasted over Juneau. And I have this great reflection of it in the water, a very strong reflection of the water. And we put that on Facebook, and it got like 1,800 shares and 1,700 likes. I forget. Unbelievable.
Right.
And if you go back in the Google Analytics, they show you just how many people that reached, because every share goes out to everyone's. And it reached 110,000 people.
Right.
In 5 days. It's crazy. It's the only thing I've ever had close to going viral. Mostly I'm getting, you know, 50 or 60 likes and 10 shares or something.
But right.
It's kind of fun to think that, wow. But I don't know what it all means in the end.
I mean, it must mean more interest in your work somewhat, do you notice? Or maybe it's hard to track that.
No, my sales seem to be out the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. It's a dream that 120,000 people in 4 days on Facebook possibly saw your photo. But I don't think it really adds. I mean, it helps build the brand, I guess, as a business.
Yeah.
You know, you're like Alaskan, and I'm
right.
like Mark Kelly.
Yeah, so. That's right. We know about these.
Yeah, I got to build the brand.
Yeah.
So,
well, speaking of which, one of the things we should talk about, one of the things people know you for so well is the calendars that you've been doing. As you said, you're doing it for 28 years now?
Yes,
the 28th
calendar.
And this year you're doing two different versions?
No,
is that
I've
right?
always – no,
have
the
you done
Juno
that?
Calendar is
okay.
in its 28th year.
I see.
And then I did a Southeast Alaska calendar that 2 years ago I changed to Alaska calendar.
I see. Okay.
So that's in its 24th year. So I've had two calendars out, 24.
Gotcha.
The Juno calendar came out in 1989 for to be for 1990 season. So that's the start there. And actually, it was a portfolio piece. At that time, I was working at the Juneau Empire. They gave me the summers off so I could go freelance and do my kayaking, all that sort of stuff. And I was putting in, I had a lot of requests, and I didn't have any, you know, I had a picture here, cover here, but nothing. So I thought I'd put together a calendar of 12 pictures. I could send it out to New York, and I printed 5,000. People in Juneau would pay for my portfolio piece,
sure,
maybe if I had luck with selling them. Well, I sold 5,000 calendars out of the 5,000 I printed. I only have two left in the archives. And I'm in the calendar business, and it's been good every year.
Yeah.
The people at Juneau have been very generous with buying the calendars.
I know people, you know, see at the public market and all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
as well. But does it, how is that as a product? Has it become a bit of a burden or a hassle to think, oh, I got to come up with that thing again? Or does it help you focus more? Does it help you think more?
Every calendar, I need an orange light shot. So when those nights look good and you go, oh, I'd really like to sleep, I the calendar forces me out because that might be the night. And so,
maybe a couple nights ago, maybe was the night
was
for
the
next
night.
Year.
Yeah. No, for right. Next year, actually. And so actually what's kind of fun is most people don't realize my calendar cycle is I have the 217s now in stock because I need to mail them out to my realtors, my business
retailers,
the retailers,
sure,
excuse
sure.
me. They need to see them in March, so they order them April, so they have them at the end of April for the May tourist season. So I get them in town end of February.
Does that mean people can get them? Can they get
them? I'm going to bring a stock to the show tonight, and so people could buy them.
Possibly, I would say you would possibly autograph it.
Yes.
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 I'm not putting you on the spot there, but I would say that if you went tonight to the Friday Fireside Lecture, that Mark might well autograph a calendar for you.
Anyways, they would get to look at get a preview of the 217.
Yeah.
It's a little bit early to buy 217, but, you know, it'd be fun. Since it's here, why not look at it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Mark Kelly, thanks so much for stopping in and talking with us. It's the Friday Fireside Lecture. It's happening tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Are there two shows?
Two shows.
So 6:30 and 8 o'clock.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, sounds great. And obviously you're going to be featuring many of your photographs, kind of telling the story about what to think about in order to get that picture.
And they're all from Alaska.
And all from Alaska. Yeah. All right. Mark, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
A little bit of myth busting now with Dennis Mamana. Sorry about it. I butchered it before. I'm sorry, Dennis, but there you go. And also Steve Kosis is here from the Marie Drake Planetarium. You're going to be doing a presentation tonight at the planetarium. Tell me a little bit about this idea of myth busting in the celestial sphere.
Well, most people go outside and look at the sky fairly rarely, and when they do look up in the sky, they have these ideas about how it behaves and how it appears, and they will make interpretations based on really no knowledge at all. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to take a look at three myths that people have about the heavens that they believe rigorously. And we're going to show them.
Can't shake them of it.
Just ain't so.
Okay.
And they're still going to believe it, but that's okay. We're going to give them a shot.
Can you give me a preview of what one of them are, what some popular myths are?
The very first one is the moon. You know how like the full moon, for example, looks huge when it's rising.
It's not actually made of cheese.
It's not. No, that one's been busted long ago. That one's been busted long ago.
So when the full
moon is actually hummus.
When the full moon is rising.
When it looks very, very large.
Okay.
You know, we've all seen that. Many people believe that the moon is closest to us, and that's why it happens. Many people also believe that it's the atmosphere that somehow acts as a lens and magnifies it. Both of those are completely false. It's an illusion that takes place in the brain itself, and I'm going to demonstrate how you can actually prove that to yourself.
That's not true.
It's absolutely
true. Is that true?
Absolutely true.
I always went for the atmosphere one.
Nope.
I knew it wasn't closest.
It's in the brain. The brain is doing it. And it's an evolutionary thing that we've developed. Yeah.
As a side note, is when the moon is closest to the Earth, is that optically something that we would be able to see?
No, it's not noticeable.
It's not enough.
It's very small. We have these things that the media has taken to calling super moons.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The moon, like a full moon, will occur at its closest point to the Earth. From there to its average distance, it's about a 7% difference in size, which is about the difference between... If you go to a pizza place and order a 14-inch pizza and they give you a 16-inch pizza, you're not going to call that a super pizza. In fact, most people probably wouldn't even be able to tell the difference between a 14 and a 16-inch, and yet that's exactly what we're talking about here.
Interesting. Any other popular ones? And I don't know if you want. I know you don't want to give away all the ones that you talk about, but maybe other ones that you're not going to talk about tonight, or just another thing to...
Oh, gosh, there are all kinds of things. One of the things that people will notice right now, and we're not going to talk about this evening, but if you look toward the southern sky, you're going to see a very, very bright star over there, twinkling madly and sparkling.
I've seen it.
Different colors. Yes. And people have no idea. I get emails all the time from folks coming up with ideas on what this thing might be. It is the star Sirius. And at this time of year, my inbox fills with people requesting information on what the heck is going on over there. The twinkling effect is an atmospheric phenomenon. The colors that seem to sparkle off of this thing are caused by the atmosphere not bending the light of different colors the same way. So red might shoot off in one direction, green might shoot off in another direction. And so... the thing looks like it's sparkling.
Yeah, I've seen that exact thing.
But people believe it's an exploding plane or whatever. and we're not going to talk about that one tonight, though.
Yeah, okay, very good.
I'll leave some mystery.
How did you get into this idea, into this sort of field of myth-busting on the celestial level?
Well, I've been doing astronomy professionally for 42 years, and after a while you start hearing the same questions over and over and over again. And so it's time to start breaking some of these down.
Yes, and Steve, tell me a little bit about how the planetarium gets involved in this.
Well, we're hosting Dennis. I believe this is his fourth visit here, and he always gives great talks that are very dynamic and entertaining and visually interesting. And so the talk tonight will be at the planetarium. It'll be 7 p.m. and it's suitable for all ages. And there'll be a charge of $5 for those over 18, but under 18 is free.
And you'll be projecting all this in the planetarium and sort of showing that kind of – is that how it's going to work?
Exactly. The planetarium dome here in Juneau is the largest in the state of Alaska. We're larger than the Thomas Planetarium in Anchorage. And actually, we're larger than the planetarium at the Pacific Science Center in Seattle. Hmm. And our planetarium's been here 49 years now.
Our planetarium's – things that are still being built and are on the forefront, or are they things that people are considering, are kind of a bit of a relic, or how are they being perceived right now? Are they at the forefront? I'm just wondering. I kind of I can imagine in this digital world we live in today and the way, you know, everyone can have an iPhone and can look at celestial charts and things like that. How does that sort of figure in with what's happening with planetariums?
Well, our planetarium is made in Pennsylvania, Spitz A4P. It's analog, a mechanical optical planetarium. And we still have it running. It's about 49 years old. But the trend now is for planetariums, as you just said, to go digital. And when it's digital, it's much more versatile. Besides doing the traditional planetarium show, you can also have visualizations of black holes and neutron stars and solar system creation and the Big Bang.
Sure,
so
yeah.
We're hoping to bring in a digital projector to back up our current analog projector.
Oh, okay.
So the
trend, analog projector is so cool.
True.
Right, it looks so cool. Right? I mean, they look like something out of a Cold War submarine or something.
It's
right?
Analog.
Yeah, right. It's analog. So all that projecting of that stuff.
And let me just add on, Dennis is also doing a second show tomorrow night.
Oh, okay. And when's that?
Same time.
So tonight and tomorrow night, 7 p.m., both times at the planetarium.
Different topic tomorrow night, though.
Okay.
Tomorrow night we're going to talk about the colors of the cosmos.
Okay, so tell me about that a little bit.
Well, the things that we can see with our eyes, one of the things, of course, is the Sirius thing, the sparkling. We got the green flash. People hear about the green flash
right.
All the time, right?
This mythical moment.
Mythical, yes. That's the key. It's not mythical at all.
Okay.
It's quite real, and it's quite easy to see if you know how to do it. So we'll give you some tips on how to do that.
Oh, okay.
Sort of
thing. Could we even see it here? I've always heard you can only see it like, off the California coast
at the moment
of sunset or something.
You can see it here if you ever get rid of these clouds. You can see it.
Well, that is an issue.
That's another matter. That's right.
Yeah.
You can certainly see it from here. In fact, you might actually be able to see it a lot better from here than from other places, because when the sun sets, it's setting at such a steep angle that it can actually last longer.
Do you have a sort of a number one question people ask you when they find out you're an astronomer, you know these things? Is there a thing that people want to know more often than any other?
Yeah, if I ever seen any UFOs.
Of course. Okay.
That's the question.
That's the question. That really is the question?
That is the question. That's the question.
I won't ask.
The answer is yes. UFO stands for Unidentified Flying Object.
Sure.
And sure, we all see UFOs. You think about it a little bit, and you turn it into an IFO.
Yeah, right.
100% of the time.
Yeah.
But
just because it's a UFO now doesn't mean someone doesn't know how to identify
them. Of course.
Yeah,
I've seen some strange things. I mean, I had one night I thought the mothership was coming for me. Honestly, I did. And I thought about it a little bit, and I realized, my gosh, that's quite a show the moon is putting on. And it was, in fact, the moon that was fooling me. But a little thought.
Uh-huh.
That was what I realized what it was.
Yeah. Of all the shows you've done, and we're very proud of our Marie Drake Planetarium here. It's beautiful. But can you tell me some of the most impressive, amazing places that you've been able to do presentations?
I did a presentation at the Hong Kong Space Center. Must have been 15 years ago now. And the audience was entirely Chinese, so they had to translate it. And I did my talk about one or two sentences at a time. They would translate it. I would continue. And I got to this point where I had a funny line, and I said the line. They translated it. Dead silence. Not a reaction. About 4 or 5 minutes later, I'm continuing on, wondering, of course, what happened. And I'm giving my talk two sentences at a time, translating and so on. And out of nowhere, the audience just erupts into laughter. And I had no idea what they were saying, what the translator was saying, because I'm being perfectly serious now, and now they're laughing. And that's something I'll never forget. That was I don't want to go through that again. I have no idea what he was saying about me.
Is making fun of your bad joke, probably. Yeah.
Probably so. Probably so. It's crazy. Probably, American comes over here and tries to make us laugh.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a really fun, both the myth-busting one tonight and then tomorrow night, the colors of the universe, the colors of the night sky are the two things that will be talked about. That's happening at 7 o'clock. It's at the Marie Drake Planetarium, where Steve Kosis is from. Thanks to you both, Steve and Dennis. Thanks for coming in and have a great show tonight.
Thank you
really
very much.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
And the loud sound it seemed to fade came back like a slow voice on a wave of fate. That were no DJ, that was hazy cosmic time. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a
Well, the rest of the day is cloudy with some flurries expected. Highs around 33. Tonight's going to be cloudy and locally a little windy. And then tomorrow, rain and snow in the morning, then a chance of rain in the afternoon. With a snow accumulation of about 1 inch in the forecast, that's mainly in the Mendenhall Valley. Saturday night, rain likely, and for Sunday, cloudy and a chance of rain. And we're going to get to a few more guests coming up in just a moment. Color Me Bad is scheduled to come in. We're also going to be learning about the Success In and Out program. But first, let's listen to Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 19th of February, 2016. It's the birthday of the scientist who first proposed that the Earth revolved around the Sun and not the other way around, Copernicus, Nicholas Copernicus, born in the ancient city of Torun in Poland in 1473. It was on this date, 1847, the Donner Party was rescued from the Sierra Nevada mountains. 89 people had set out by wagon train from Springfield, Illinois. An early blizzard stranded them there in the Sierra Nevadas after they had taken what they thought was a shortcut. It took 20 days for the rescue party to arrive back. A man in the rescue party said, "We saw a woman emerge from a hole in the snow. Then others made their appearance coming out of the snow. They were gaunt with famine, and I never can forget the horrible, ghastly sight they presented. The first woman spoke in a hollow voice and said, 'Are you men from California, or do you come from heaven?' Of those 89 on the wagon train, only 45 survived the journey." It's the birthday of the author of the Surrealist Manifesto in 1924, André Breton, born in Tichebray, France, 1896. He was interested in mental illness and in Freud's theory of the unconscious. And the manifesto was simply to recommend that people think about a new state of being where dream and fantasy are joined to the everyday world. And it's the birthday of Amy Tan, born to Chinese immigrant parents in Oakland, 1952. Her mother hoped she'd become a concert pianist or a doctor. Instead, she became a writer, started out writing business manuals and speeches. And then, in about 4 months, she wrote a book of short stories which worked together like a novel. It was published as The Joy Luck Club. It was a bestseller in 1989. Her latest is The Valley of Amazement. It came out in 2013. Here's a poem for today by Hilaire Belloc. George, who played with a dangerous toy and suffered a catastrophe of considerable dimensions. When George's grandmama was told that George had been as good as gold, she promised in the afternoon to buy him an immense balloon, and so she did. But when it came, it got into the candle flame, and being of a dangerous sort, exploded with a loud report. The lights went out. The windows broke. The room was filled with reeking smoke, and in the darkness shrieks and yells were mingled with electric bells and falling masonry and groans and crunching as of broken bones and dreadful shrieks when, worst of all, the house itself began to fall. It tottered, shuddering to and fro, then crashed into the street below, which happened to be Saville Row. When help arrived, among the dead were Cousin Mary, little Fred, the footman, both of them, the groom, the man that cleaned the billiard room, the chaplain, and the still-room maid, and I am dreadfully afraid that Monsieur Champignon, the chef, will now be permanently deaf, and both his aides are much the same, while George, who was in part to blame, received, you will regret to hear, a nasty lump behind the ear. Moral: the moral is that little boys should not be given dangerous toys. George, you played with a dangerous toy, a poem by Hilaire Belloc. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This month's Barn Dance is this Saturday, February 20th, 7:30 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall on 5th Street downtown. There's always live music, and Full Circle String Band will be on hand to play Celtic and New England tunes, and Susie Kendig will teach and call contra dances. As always, you don't need any experience or a partner, just be ready for a fun and friendly atmosphere. Student and senior discounts and free for JVs and AmeriCorps, sponsored by the Juno Folk Dancers with help from KTOO. Barn Dance, Saturday.
Well, Color Me Bad is in town. They're going to be playing at Suite 907 tonight. They're not quite here yet, but, you know, they're part of that new jack kind of music that was coming out in the early to mid-90s, and they had this one big hit that was, I remember it so well, great hit. Let's play it right now. Should we play it? It's a little bit sexy, folks. It's going to lay you down on a bearskin rug right now. Here it comes. It's Color Me Bad. They're playing tonight, Suite 907, and we're hoping they'll make it into the studio here. They're doing sound checks and stuff, so they might be running a little late. And in the meantime, let's hear I Wanna Sex You Up.
I'm
Well, that's Color Me Bad. They want to sex you up. At least they did in the 90s. I think they still do now. They're at Suite 907 appearing tonight. They did not make it in yet. Hopefully they might, but we've got folks here from the Success In and Out program, Keith Levy and Ben Brown, who are both part of the program, both volunteering and assisting with it. Keith, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Ben.
Good
as always,
you,
good to see you.
Indeed.
And Keith, start with you. Tell me just a little bit about the program itself, if people have never heard of it or don't know what it is.
Well, it's put on by the court system in conjunction with Department of Corrections. It's a day at the jail. It is essentially a professional conference that's geared toward inmates who are expected to be released within a year. I guess that I would summarize it by saying what we do is we try to give inspiration to help people succeed and information, a lot of just basics, things that people need to know when they get released from jail.
What are some of those basics? What are some of the things that people might not even realize that folks who have been incarcerated for a while are dealing with?
Finding housing that they can afford, finding employment, getting into treatment. There are a lot of barriers that go up for people with, particularly with felony convictions.
Mm-hmm. And there's some intangibles too. Just going back to church, if someone wants to have a religious component to their life or a spiritual exercise, healthy living, mm-hmm. Staying sober is a huge one. So those resources, people may not be thinking, oh, this is going to be something that I have to deal with. Well, it is, and if they get some help with it, it can make a huge difference in how well they do when they're released.
It is that thing of people have been in this really controlled environment for up to multiple years. You get out if you haven't kind of really carefully dealt with some of the situations that were there before you went in, your chances of success must just go way down.
Well, Judge Levy sits on the district court bench, and he sees successful and less successful stories all the time. I was an attorney in private practice and had clients, and I would get them a deal that involved a certain amount of time, and some of them just were predisposed to do a lot better than others, and this is a way to perhaps level that playing field so everyone who's coming out has a better chance of succeeding.
Yeah. Is this something how is this funded? How does all that happen for this?
It is, I'll let Ben talk about it, but it's basically volunteers. People are just given their time.
Right. I'm a member of the Juno Bar Association. We're just a professional association. It's not a mandatory bar. The Alaska Bar, we have to have our membership, mm-hmm. pay our rather expensive dues, which we do just a few weeks ago. But the Juno Bar is just a...
This isn't a platform for that kind of complaint, Ben. Let's just... Okay.
Are you listening, Alaska Bar Board of Governors? The Juno Bar is just a fraternal, but professional organization, and... since Judge Collins started this program almost a decade ago, every year the bar has given money. Individual bar members, law firms have given some money. So that's one of the things I've been working on is soliciting donations. And, Baxter, Bruce, and Sullivan, Faulkner, Banfield, Simpson, Tillingham, Sorensen, and Sheehan. I just talked to a couple individual attorneys today, are all giving a modest amount. It doesn't take a huge amount. Businesses have been really good. The Island Pub, Subway of Juneau, Bullwinkle's, the Breeze Inn are all contributing some food. So there's a little more variety in the menu than mm-hmm. you usually get in Lemon Cream Cut. Saturday,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And it's just to give them, it's almost like a snapshot of life on the outside one day where a whole bunch of people who they don't see usually in jail come in. Our legislators are going to be there. Senator Egan, Representative Munoz, Representative Quito have agreed to try to come. Of course, the way this session is going, we'll see what they're doing on the morning of Saturday the 12th of March. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott's going to be there. And just his presence alone, I think, sends a validating message. You're Alaskans too, and there's a wall between you and the rest of us right now, but it's not going to be there forever. And then gets down kind of later in the day to the specifics of what life is going to be like when they get out.
This is something that, to me, it seems like something that maybe I would expect to be more officially funded. I mean, it seems like it should be a function of dealing with people as they get out of incarceration.
Yeah.
It seems like such a natural thing that will, in the long run, save money and all those kinds of things.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, and you hit that nail on the head. I mean, there are, there is an in-house probation officer at the facility. They do work with them in a number of areas, but this is sort of just an adjunct to that. And I think there is a much greater recognition of the need for this,
mm-hmm.
As a way of funding things up front and then not having people come back as often.
Are there certain moments that you – go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say there's a larger context going on here. Criminal justice reform is an issue of national concern and importance. There's been efforts in Congress, bipartisan efforts in the U.S. Senate. They're still trying in many areas. So Senator Grassley, the chair of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, has taken a keen interest in this. In our state legislature, Senator John Coghill from North Pole has really taken the issue to heart. There was a Criminal Justice Commission appointed, and you mentioned funding. The funds from that didn't come from the legislature, and that's the problem. We're pretty cash-strapped right now. So new programs are not going to be funded with state dollars at this time. But the Pew Charitable Trust helped this commission do a very thorough investigation into what's working, what's not working, came up with a real tangible set of recommendations. They've been reduced to a bill, Senate Bill 91, which Senator Coghill is working to try to build bipartisan support for, because it's called the reinvestment report, because that's what we're looking at. How are we spending these dollars? Locking everyone up is not working. It's this escalating trend up, 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 up. And so we need to stop doing that and think about who are we sending into jail in the first place? For how long are they going there? Are they going while they're awaiting trial, or is it because they've been sentenced? All those things will free up more dollars. So maybe in the future, there will be some more official funding for it through the Department of Corrections.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like such a natural thing. You know, for so long, maybe we've had a little bit of a simple idea about what incarceration is all about. These are bad people. They did bad things. We put them away, and then they get out. And then they're not going to do bad things anymore, right? And or be in bad situations,
I would disagree with the first premise,
right,
that they're bad people.
No, I think I disagree with that as well. Yeah. But I think that's the premise.
Yeah, a very large percentage of people who find their way into the criminal justice system are either suffering from addiction or mental illness, and those things are treatable. And studies show that working on that aspect of things is a lot more effective than incarceration. Mm-hmm. And the recidivism rate in Alaska is something like 66%. 2 out of 3 will come back within a year with a new offense. Is that a high rate compared to other states? I don't know how it compares to other states, but it seems unacceptable.
Sure.
And
yeah,
it's much higher here. Now, it's gone up precipitously fast here in Alaska, and certainly with some communities. So, you know, Alaska Natives, for instance, are just outrageously overrepresented in the incarcerated population. So the Criminal Justice Commission is an easily Googleable thing. So folks listening want to learn more about it. The report's very interesting. Senate Bill 91 is very interesting. And the sponsor statement for Senate Bill 91, I think, relays a lot of these wonky facts about conditions of release that really have a practical effect. And again, I can go back to my days as an attorney with defense clients, and I would just see prosecutors, you know, God bless them, making the most outrageous demands on what this person was going to have to do to get out while they were awaiting trial. And if they're in jail while they're awaiting trial, while they're still presumed innocent, all the negative effects of incarceration are already starting to happen. Not being able to go to work. Are you going to get a leave of absence for the time you're in waiting for trial? And if you don't have work, you don't have money. All of a sudden, you can't pay the rent. You can't pay the bills. Your family structure starts to fall apart, and it can just cascade and cascade. Yes, some people need to be locked up while they're awaiting trial, but let's look really hard and carefully at why and for how long, and not waste scarce resources on that. That's just one of the many recommendations. But to get back to Success Inside and Out.
Yeah, this volunteer program.
It's a volunteer program, and it's a real opportunity for the community to do something above and beyond state government doing something.
And I'm just tying back into that, you know, so a lot of what we're trying to do is to provide information for the inmates, but the other piece of it is the other way around, to let to the community, because we have about 60 volunteers involved in this program, for them to see that these folks are just humans. They're people. We have people who come in who have been through the system, who are doing well on probation, and, you know, it's good for the community to see that actually people are successful. They're not, you know, a felon is not somebody that you can pick out on the street that looks different from you. They're just like you and me, and some of them are doing very well and not presenting a danger to the community, in fact, serving the community.
Are there certain volunteers that your program might be looking for right now, people with certain expertise, things like that, if they wanted to get involved?
You know, we've talked about that a couple of times today, and we're pretty much set for this year's program, which is March 12th. The one thing that really we can't have too much of is employers who are able and willing to hire people with criminal records, because that is a huge barrier for people. There's a lot of jobs that just aren't available. And, you know, if they can't find work, it makes it really hard to go forward and be successful.
You can imagine people getting into desperate situations again pretty quickly if there's no work to be found, if there's no money to be found. You're back to, you know, where you can be compromised.
And those first few days and weeks leading into the months are going to be that critical time where someone makes the right steps and choices or does not. And, you know, that's what we have probation for. But to expect a probation officer to be just the punitive side of helping people make the right choice, the positive side, you know, do it for yourself. Have a vision. Have a plan for what you're going to do and what you want to do with the rest of your life. Boy, that's going to make one probation officer's caseload so much more manageable if half of his or her probationers, you know, have any sense of that opportunity that being released from incarceration presents to them. Mm. So, of course, the other way we can always use assistance is if people are wanting to donate financially. And we have a very modest budget. Again, I've mentioned businesses that have given us a lot of good in-kind stuff. But having some money on hand to help pay for the other appurtenances of a conference, like you would go to if you weren't in prison, is nice because it just gives them that validating sense of, I went to a really cool symposium today,
yeah.
And I'm in jail, and I went to a symposium. But that, I guess symposium is probably not the right word. But at any rate, it's a workshop. It's a good day-long seminar. So people can contact the clerk of court, Sharon Heidersdorf, at 463-4700, and then she could put them in touch with me, and I could arrange to come by and pick up a check, which you can be quite sure I'd be happy to do.
Yes, very good. How long has this program been going on?
This is the 9th year in Juneau.
Yeah. And is it a nationwide? Is it affiliated, you know, with other programs? Or?
It's not affiliated. I think that the first program in Alaska was started by Justice Dana Fabe, in Anchorage at the women's facility, Highland Mountain. And this was modeled after that. Judge Collins worked with her on that and then started the program here. And then when she retired, I took it over.
Is there a way of measuring the success rate of people who participate in the program versus not? Maybe there isn't. I don't know.
You know, there is. I mean, the answer is no. I mean, that would take, you know, to do a study. That would take money, and sure. You'd have to find I don't know how you'd find a control group. But so all I can say is anecdotally, I know that people, I think, get quite a bit out of it. And I do see people who were participated in the program several years ago and then come back to speak who are now doing well. They're on the outside and they're doing well.
And that must be an amazing experience to go through.
It's very gratifying.
You know, and perhaps because, I mean, now that I've been brought back into this effort after many years hiatus, I'm happy to keep working on it. I think it's a really good thing for the legal community to support, the business community to support. We're going to have a chance to talk with the Chamber of Commerce about it next week, and I think that's just great because that's a really important target audience. But in future years, Andy, maybe we could get one of those success candidates to come and talk, on Juneau afternoon. Because
I think,
you know, we can talk about it, but that's who it's aimed at. And I think that testimonial is probably the most moving thing.
Well, Ben Brown, Keith Levy, thanks so much for coming and talking to us about Success In and Success Out program. I appreciate it so much. And good luck with this year's seminar, as you said, symposium, workshop.
All right. Thank you,
happening.
Andy. Thanks
okay,
for having
thanks
me.
So much. Here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Have you noticed those little brown birds with red breasts at your bird feeders? Those are house finches, familiar birds all across North America. The female house finch is brown and streaked, the male similar, but with bright red patches on its head, breast, and rump. Researchers have shown that the red coloration of males is produced from carotenoid pigments contained in the bird's diet. Carotenoids are the same pigments that give oranges and carrots their color, the pigments that make goldfinches yellow and flamingos pink. We also know that male house finches develop brighter plumage when they're growing in new feathers if they eat more fruits containing carotenoids. So, well-fed means bright red. When a male house finch sings to attract a female, he's better off being well-fed, because females prefer more brightly colored males. Redder males also attract females in better condition, and such a pair raises, on the average, more young. The message is clear. In the world of house finches, the way to romance and a family begins with a good diet. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
All right, and we're back in the studio here where we're joined by, that's right, Coloring Me Bad. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
All right. All right, I got to get that microphone on. I just realized that mic's not on. Hold on just a second. But you guys are good. How's it going over here with you guys?
Great. Happy to be out here in Alaska.
Have you found the headphones?
Now, have you been before? Have you been to Alaska before?
Yes. Not here. This is beautiful. Is it on yet?
It is now on.
All right.
First, so let's go through and just introduce as we go down.
My name is Brian Abrams.
My name is Adam Amil.
And my name is Mark Calderon.
All right, very good. And Color Me Bad, it's awesome to have you guys in here.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
You can still hit those high notes? Oh, there it was. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
That was a little weird. I don't know what that was. I've got a little Tourette's.
That's coming out of a big man, too. I like that, man.
Why, thank you.
You would not expect that coming out of you. That's like...
I kind of got a biker kind of thing going on, but, you know, I like to sing real pretty sometimes.
So fun to have you guys here, get back to you. You've been to Alaska before? You have not been to Alaska before, or you have?
We have. We were out here, we were in Anchorage.
Anchorage, though.
Not
Juneau.
Not Juneau. This is the first time. Yeah. Well, first time for us.
Back in the 90s, we were here, though. We came out to Alaska in the 90s, and then we were here last year in Anchorage. First time here, it will not be the last time.
All right. I like hearing that. Yeah. That's always cool to hear, especially when the weather's not perfect. It's not perfect. It's not bad, though.
It's pretty nice. Awesome.
Yeah. Did you guys get to the glacier and stuff like that yet?
Not yet. I think it's in the plans.
You got to drive out and do that. All right. So you guys are playing at the Suite 907 tonight.
Yes.
Very fun. The setup there is really fun. That's like we got like a real club in Juneau now.
Okay.
Kind of amazing, that Suite 907, the way it's transformed, what it looks
nice
like.
Nice club. Yeah. We were there earlier. Yeah,
very cool place. Yeah. So you guys are kind of out there setting up equipment, doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
Getting it all ready to
go. Yes, sir.
So tell me about, are you in the middle of a tour?
We are. I mean, we haven't really called it a tour, but there are so many dates popping up. Which we are very grateful for.
I can imagine.
It's a really good year for us. And so there's a lot of 90s interest popping up that we're really happy about.
Yeah.
And so, we've been really busy. This is probably one of the busiest months. And we've actually had, how many? Just in the last couple of days, we've gotten several offers in to do some other spots. We're already trying to work out a situation where we're coming back to Alaska in June, and that's off of something that just happened last night.
Oh, very cool.
Which is awesome, because we want to move here. I want to move here. I love it. Honestly, my wife and I love it. It's beautiful.
Fishing,
We haven't had a chance to do any of that, so we're hoping maybe June. We're going to try to Juneau.
I'd love it.
And again.
All right. Hey, so has that atmosphere for bands that you guys have a household name, you know, people know, remember songs of you guys, has that changed a little bit, the interest level? I mean, like, I know casinos, for instance, bring in a lot of bands and stuff like that. Have you noticed more and more interest happening with that lately? Is that something that's been changing?
I mean, you know, they've been a lot of interest, especially kind of what Brian was talking about. They've got this thing going on. It's called I Love the 90s, and we're a part of that package.
Yeah.
It's about like five or six acts, and we're hitting just about every place in the States. So I don't know if they've got plans to come out here or not, but we're here now. So we're happy to be a part of that. We're doing, we're doing arenas. We're doing a lot of the arenas right now. So
that's awesome.
But like on the side. On the side shows, maybe, they'll throw in a casino here and there.
Yeah.
So, we did the Orleans Casino last week in Vegas. But that was an arena. I mean, some of these big casinos have these arena stadiums, like places.
They hide these big spots. I don't know where they put it. Is it underground? I don't know. But you walk into it and you're kind of, wowed by it.
You know, 12,000, 13,000 theaters.
Amazing. Wow. Yeah. So,
unbelievable.
Must feel like, there you go. It's like it's happening. What's that feeling like? You walk out.
That's pretty surreal.
Yeah.
Those big crowds like that. And you really kind of got to pinch yourself, check yourself a little bit, have somebody slap you, because it's different. Big stage, high off the ground, you've got all these people out there, and it is a lot of fun, but I gotta be honest with you, it's more fun personally to me to do smaller venues, because you can get right up on people, they can get right up on you, and it's just a lot more personal, I'm saying?
Well, you guys, I'm sorry, I got to cut it short. We just had a compressed time frame here, but color me bad, you guys are playing at Suite 907 tonight.
Yes.
And if folks mention that they heard you today on K2, they get $10 off the ticket.
Right. Yeah.
So that's a great deal as an awesome thing. Color me bad happening.
Come on out. Have some fun with us tonight.
Make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter under Real Color Me Bad, right?
I'd love to hear one more high note.
Over and over again, I try to tell myself that we.
There you go.
All right, now let's get back to programming with NPR.
Americans paid their respects today to the late Antonin Scalia.
For Friday, February 19th, it's All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Ari Shapiro. Coming up in this hour, E.J. Dionne and David Brooks on politics.
Critic Lizzie Skernick on author Harper Lee, who died today.
She depicted the polarization in a southern town so well, and the myths our country likes to believe about each other so well.
Also these stories, why this week's terror trials at Guantanamo ground to a halt.
The new album from gospel soul singer Mavis Staples.
And why the alligators in the Florida Everglades are shrinking, not just in numbers, but in size.
The Everglades food machine is broken.
Those stories in this hour, after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. U.S. warplanes carried out an airstrike in northwest Libya this morning. NPR Scott Horsley reports the target was a suspected training camp operated by the Islamic State.
A White House spokesman says officials are still assessing the results of the airstrike, in which dozens of people reportedly were killed. Spokesman Josh Earnest says, in addition to the training camp, the strike was aimed at a particular ISIS leader, Nureddin Shushan, who's suspected of helping foreign fighters move freely across.